Seattle Sports Snapshot. With the Apple Cup canceled, the Huskies will now play Utah at Husky Stadium Saturday night at 7:30 on ESPN. The Utes were available to be scheduled due to their game against Arizona State being canceled due to an outbreak of COVID-19 within the Sun Devils program. The Seahawks expect to return multiple starters from injury for their Monday night matchup against the Philadelphia Eagles. Get ready for the Hawks primetime matchup throughout the Thanksgiving holiday, as every 710 ESPN Seattle host will be talking Hawks from 7 to 7 Thursday and Friday.
Snapshot, brought to you by Coors Light, keeping Washington chill.
This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. This hour of the show is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. And we have with us on the line, joining us, what's that tapping over there? What is that? What is that, Gross? Are you tapping something? Are you?
It's me. I'm typing something in my computer.
Oh, yep. Okay. I was wondering if that was.
I'll make it stop.
Well, I'm just calling you out, just kind of like you did Clayton about the COVIDs thing. He's saying COVIDs, Paul. Why does he keep saying COVIDs? All of our texters, it's driving us crazy. And then you say it's COVID, and John's like, yeah, that's what I said, COVID. And I'm like, and then like maybe 5 minutes later, it'll be, yeah, because of the COVID tests out there in Pittsburgh, then, yeah, it's funny with him. But you say it right.
I heard that segment, and I giggled as I was driving.
Yeah.
And I started to try to play with, I go, would I say flus, colds, COVIDs? I don't know.
You say lots of weird things, though. And I know this isn't a good way to – you say growing – instead of groin.
Groin, it's easier.
You say groin.
I know, it's easy. Who wants to say groin?
Grossi also says deference. And now, I don't know why he puts an extra N in there.
I get a little lazy. Well, Dave does member for remember. So we all get a little lazy.
You guys have known each other too long.
Do you remember that, Paul?
Yes, we have.
Yeah. Oh, what else does Paul do? Hold on a second. Well, first of all, he yelled at me when I was a rookie. I told Groz that story. And then you did redeem yourself by setting me up with Shannon. So I appreciate that.
I'd like to think that's my finest hour. Yeah.
Paul, one of them. Paul used to say, he used to put it this way, Groz, that I'm responsible for Wyman's children. And I'm like, I don't really like the way that sounds.
You worded it a little differently.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I got Shannon liquored up that night for you, Dave.
Yeah.
Well, I know both your wives, and you both outkicked your coverage big time.
You know, I know that people like to say that all the time, but I don't think so, Groz. I don't think so.
You don't? You're nuts.
Hey, okay, do you remember George Dyer? George Dyer was a D-line coach. Paul, you, of course, love George Dyer. And I just sent a video to him. It was like his 80th birthday.
Yeah.
George was a bit of a mess. Like, I remember he had this horrible knee. He's just hilarious and the sweetest guy in the world. But, like, I remember one time he had something in his ear, and so he went in, and the trainers pulled something out of his ear that was like a fossil, and it clinked in the metal sink. And he had these thick glasses and everything. But he had this wife named Marge, and Marge was just a super put-together, pretty lady and everything. And George would always, when everybody would say, you know, you outkicked your coverage. He's like, no, you know what? I probably could have done a lot better, really. And it was just hilarious the way it came off, because if you knew George and you knew his wife, it was exactly the opposite of that. But, yeah,
right.
he liked to say that. You remember George.
George recruited me at Arizona State.
That's
he was
right.
My defensive coordinator. And even then, because he's still married to Marge, who's just a phenomenal woman. He used to say that. He goes, oh, yeah, I could have done better.
Yeah.
And no.
We all knew he was joking. We all knew he was joking.
Yeah, that was a big joke. And unlike you, Dave, my wife will listen to the show. I outkicked my coverage.
Yes, good. So, I could say whatever I want. Shannon's not listening to the show.
No, that's what I mean. There's no way.
No, there's no question.
That's good.
Hey, Paul, let me ask you about this meeting. Let's get to some football instead of all this other stuff. What about, although it might be more interesting to people, who knows, but, Paul, this accountability meeting that they had the other day, first of all, you know, we've been part of those as teammates, actually, where everybody – I remember you standing up, Paul, and we were playing the Raiders, and it might have been the year that we won the NFC or the AFC West for the first time. Went out and played. Yeah, and I remember you standing up and saying something about, you know, what we needed to do and everything. But it sounds like – I guess the question I had on this one with the Seahawks is, why did this take so long, or – do you think it was maybe just something that came together that they just hadn't thought to do before? What do you think that meeting was about?
Well, I think there's in coaching, you try not to play that card too much. You know, the team meetings, players only meetings. You know, when you start having those, you're addressing things that are wrong, and you just don't want to go to that well too often. And I think the Seahawks, you know, have an environment of accountability. You know, tell the truth Monday. It's never personal. It's just, hey, here's what we need to do as a team. But you kept hearing Pete with little messages, and one of them was, you know, things are loose, and you watch on film and you go, you got to be tighter in coverage. That's your responsibility on the bootleg. And look, I think a lot of it was on the veterans, and I think they needed to bring them in and say, hey, I don't care who you are right now. You know, this is about competition, and there is an accountability on every single play, and every play matters. You know, sometimes, you know, you take a play off, you know, whether it's a play away, and all of a sudden a guy cuts it back, and you hit yourself in the head and go, oh, my God, why didn't I get there? So I think that was the accountability part, is that, hey, every play matters. Every guy's job is on the line every single week. And I think sometimes you have some veterans, you get comfortable, and they need to be reeled in as well. So we don't know what behind it, but whatever it was, hey, all hands on deck. None of you are above the law here, and we need to get back and play, you know, accountability football. And guess what? It seemed to work, because it was not just statistically was it the best game they've played defensively all year. It was the best we've seen on film. They were tighter in coverage. They were looking up receivers and play action and bootlegs. They were hustling on every single play. And, you know, we're still missing guys, right? We're missing our two starting corners. Both of our, again, our back, I thought Trey Flowers and DJ Reed gave us a spark. And DJ Reed, while, you know, he's 5'8", 5'9", man, his toughness, you respect that. So I just thought the whole thing last week looked good, and hopefully it's more to come.
Do you think they're quote-unquote fixed?
Well, I don't think you fix things in one day or one game. But I will say this, Graz, if you go and look at the last three games, and let me just pull this one up as I was playing around with it. You go and look at the last three games, they have played better. As a matter of fact, the last three games, they've given up 374 yards a game. That's about 20th right now over the last three games. It would put you, I think, in the top 20 if you brought that out throughout the year. So they're playing better. They played better against the Rams defensively. They certainly played better last week. Buffalo, they played better after the first three drives of the game, they played better. So we now have 2.5 games where I go, okay, if we can do that with the offense that we have, now we are a Super Bowl contender. We go from a good team to a very good to great team. And I don't think we're a top 10 defense. You don't do that in the season. That's an off season of changing maybe some scheme, and you know, there's just been no practice with all the new players. I think that's just tough. So I don't think it's completely fixed, but it's better. It's good enough. And I think by the end of the year, we got a chance to be a top 15 defense if we get everybody healthy and everybody playing, you know, the way they're supposed to be playing.
Well, I remember early on, first of all, I said 13-3 would be their record. They could sweep. They could go the rest of the way they're playing their defense. But I also did say that they should be a top five defense. So I was way off on that one. But
well, I think on paper, Dave, you've seen it. I mean, look, you got Jamal Adams. You got. I'm just looking in the secondary. You know, you get Griffin back and Dunbar when he's playing, if he's healthy and he yeah. plays the way that he played last year. I mean, you got a secondary. It's really good. Jordan Brooks is really starting to come on as a rookie. I mean, I didn't think he was actually going to be this good his first year. I thought he would be, you know, year two, year three. We saw the athletic ability, but he's picked it up. He's a very smart guy that didn't have a lot of reps in the type of defense he's playing now with the Seahawks. I think when you add Dunlap and, you know, with hopefully Mayo and just the rotation there, I mean, we're starting to see Collier play better, Reed's playing better, Ford. I mean, it's starting to come. So I think on paper we could say, yeah, why wouldn't they be a top five, top ten defense? Yeah. You know, but it takes more than just putting X's and O's and people on a board. And now you got to go and communicate. You got to play well together. You got to trust each guy is going to be there. But Dave, I mean, if you look at this team, we keep them together. Maybe next year it is a top ten defense.
Well, let me ask you about Quentin Dunbar. I was talking about him earlier and how Pete. Talked about him, and I remember you talking about how good he is in zone. I did a little breakdown of him in the first game, where in the run game actually, where he plays the edge really well. So, but he just, you know, I think he's breaking down. I mean, we talked about the fact that the guy probably, I mean, he had to have been affected by what went on in the offseason, thinking he was going to be in trouble, possibly, you know, go to jail. I mean, there was all kinds of stuff going on, and so yeah, it stands to reason that he's breaking down physically, I guess. But what about his – a lot of people are saying, oh, this guy's not very good and he's a flop. And I've not seen any of that. And I think that he has a chance to be really good. But tell us what you see.
Well, he's been injured. And so, I mean, we can't judge him on what we've seen really this year. You know, he missed – there were no OTAs. You come into a new defense – and when he was at Washington last year, look, they had a great front four. They got after you. And, you know, I've used the example of Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman's a really good corner and one of the best when you can rush with four guys and the ball has to come out on time because he's so good at reading the routes, at trusting his instincts. You know, Sherman's a little different player because he likes to play more bump and run. That's not what Dunbar's done a lot of. He's old school. He likes to play off, read routes. He jumps them. He trusts it. But if you don't have a really good pass rush, that takes away from some of his skill set. I think he's getting comfortable with that. He is a good football player, though. You just have to go watch what he's done in the past. His thing, he's just got to get healthy. I mean, obviously against Buffalo – maybe it was a Ram game. I don't remember which one
Buffalo,
he went out
yeah.
on. It was Buffalo. He was 20%. Yeah. You know, some people say, oh, he was 80%. No, he wasn't. He was less than 50 for sure. And, you know, he was trying to gut it out, and they should have pulled him. That was just a mistake. And, you know, sometimes you think your starters are going to be better than your backups even when they're hurt, and that's not always the case. He's going to be a good football player, but we got to get him healthy. If he's not healthy, obviously, nothing to judge him on right now.
Hey, let me ask you guys both this question, and it's about something you were just talking about. Does a good defensive line make a secondary better more than a good secondary makes a good defensive line / pass rush better? How does that relationship work? Is that a symbiotic relationship?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I don't think – really weird, Rob. I was thinking about that today. I don't think if you have one of them that's not good, the other one will never be able to excel the way you want. And again, I'll bring it back to Richard Sherman. When Richard Sherman was here in our front four, he's the best of the best. You know, 2 years ago or whenever it was when he was in San Francisco, they didn't have as good a pass rush, or even, you know, his last year with us when our pass rush dropped. It just didn't allow him to be the best he can be. I think in today's age, you actually have to have both, because the game, you could rush four guys in the past, right, and play some zone or whatever you want, cover two. The way the game is called and the way it's out in space with all these deep routes and them picking up, you know, blocking seven guys, keeping in an extra running back tied in to run these deep routes, boy, I think you've got to have both nowadays. So chicken answer from me. I think the old days, the pass pass rush was more important than the secondary, I don't think you can get away with a bad secondary, even if you have a great pass rush anymore.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Gross, and this goes off of something that Moyer just sent me. So, Paul, you should have answered the other way on this. Now, I won't tell you how to answer, but remember the clip that you sent me where Jordan Brooks picks up the deep crosser, which causes Jared Goff to pull the ball down, which allows Jamal Adams to get there and strip sack him. You know, so I'm gonna go with I think the coverage these days is more important, and maybe that's just because last year I thought that was entirely the problem why they only got 28 sacks. The ball was coming out so fast it was ridiculous. There was no time to get there. But you know, and that was a good example that you found, Paul, where you know, the quarterback, he thinks he's going to throw, and the quarterbacks, Graz and I went through this yesterday, the quarterbacks just don't throw interceptions anymore. I mean, it's you know, a lot of it's the rules and things like that, but we were going back in the 70s and looking at, like, Terry Bradshaw and guys like that. I mean, Ken Stabler, I mean, they've thrown way more interceptions than touchdowns. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's a good example of how, you know, and Cliff Averill even told us this last week when we had him on. He said, he goes, this is one of the reasons why I came here from Detroit and signed a free agent contract. He goes, I knew I was going to have time to get to the passer because of the Legion of Boom at that time. So, and I don't know if it's changed or a little bit. It used to be just, you know, if you had a pass rush, the quarterbacks are just so good now, you know, and they're so well coached and they're so well protected and their receivers are so well protected. I just feel like, you know, it's more on the coverage, I guess, but I'm sure it's a, you know, you could answer either way.
No, I thought my answer was a little bit to agree with that. The old days, you needed to have a pass rush, right? I mean, you could get away with an average secondary. I don't think that's the case anymore because they'll block seven guys. We see it with the Rams. You know, you could have four great pass rushers. It doesn't matter. I mean, they can, you know, still buy time for 3-4 seconds downfield. And it's not just that you got to be a great cover guy. You have to understand pattern recognition. You've got to understand when a tight end blocks and they keep a running back in that they're going maximum protection. They're blocking seven guys. And if you're rushing four, they're not getting there. And so these deep routes need to turn to man-to-man. The one we talked about, it was a play-action pass where Brooks was on the backside and he saw a deep crossing route. And if he didn't pick it up, that would have been a 20, 25-yard easy throw for Goff. He did. Goff had to come off that throw, and he looked for his second or third option. That allowed Adams, who was still hustling in on a blitz, to get in there. He didn't get in there initially. I mean, it took him three and a half seconds to finally get the strip sack. But the coverage behind it, the recognition of that, allowed for that sack. So, I think you got to have both now. I don't know what's more important, but I think the routes are so, I don't want to say complicated. It's just you really have to understand what the team is trying to do to you in the secondary and to the linebackers. And once you recognize it, you better be right. Otherwise, we got these huge holes. So, I know the secondary and linebackers are critical nowadays in that passing game.
Yeah,
to play Paul now. Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead. You got it, Gross.
How difficult would it be? How different would it be for you to be playing now versus when you were playing, considering what you can't do now and what you could do when you played?
Well, I think the stuff we used to do, we probably couldn't do it, and it's more. You know, we had off-season training. We were together all the time, and we ran. You know, we've got an NFL record; it'll never be broken. You know, the most turnovers created in defense back in 1984. I can't remember how many interceptions, 37, something like that. I think we had over 60 turnovers that year. And we ran a lot of what we call combo defenses, and you know, 3-on-2. Type of situations, and we were so good at it that, you know, crossing routes didn't even matter. We picked those up, and once you got that, there's always a guy dropping in the hole to help somebody else, and we were really good, and we had a lot of smart guys in the secondary, but the amount of reps that we did on that and walkthroughs and before practice and after practice and during practice, and we had 2-a-days in camp for 4 weeks and sometimes 3-a-days. Well, they don't do that anymore. I don't know how you're trying to coach it on film, and you're trying to coach it in, you know, on a board, and you're trying to maybe some walkthroughs, but you got to see real live reps on that. And so I think defenses are less complicated. Offenses have become more of an X and O, you know, where you're having these intricate routes and deep routes that they used to not have time back then. So the answer to your question on that, Groz, is I think I'd have been fine. Matter of fact, probably even better. You know, I wouldn't be worried about always having to hit somebody coming across the middle. Nowadays, you just make a tackle, you know, and I could play all these patterns, no problem. The challenge would be, what kind of defense would I be able to run, or what would we be running? You know, is it simplified? You know, the stuff we ran, we ran a lot of two on one, you know, situations, you know, 3-on-2, you know, just hard stuff to teach. But once you get it, holy crud, it was a great defense.
All those reps and all that practice, you're talking about Grandpa Munster there, aren't you? Ralph Hawkins?
Yeah, those are good old, yeah, good old Ralphie.
Ralph looks exactly, he looked like exactly like Grandpa Munster. It was hilarious.
Smart guy, though.
He was, man.
Players didn't love him. You know, he was a bit of on the edge today. You'd probably have been kicked out of the league for some of the things he used to say that would be interpreted not proper.
The things he said to me my rookie year, oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I was like, wow, this is a coach.
Yeah. Back then, you can get away with a lot of things. You know, in high school, I had coaches, they'd grab your face mask and they'd curse you out, you know what. You know, nowadays, you know, you can't do any of that. And that would have been nice on his – that would have been nice from Ralph. But he was equal opportunity. He'd get after anybody.
Hey, let me play a clip here. You've been big on Jordan Brooks, as have I, and I know you're a big fan of linebacker play, Paul. Pete Carroll talking about Jordan Brooks.
He's a really good ball player. He's helping us. The running and hitting part is really what he specializes in. He's a terrific athlete and very explosive. As he continues to learn and just get more accurate, more in command of what he's doing, he's just going to be really, really good. There's nothing to keep him from there. He's instinctive, smart, tough. He's kind of got a real quiet toughness about him, and he's doing a really good job of, you know, being the first pick and being humble and just working hard. So I'm really, really thrilled about that pick and what he contributes to this team.
Couple things, Paul. I think the thing that's impressed me the most I thought he'd be physical. I thought he would hit, and he's doing all that. The zone defense, the understanding in the zone defense, to me, is what really has surprised me and impressed me, because it looked like he was a spy guy, and, you know, he was a guy that played man-to-man coverage in college, and now he's picking up, like you said, the deep crossers and everything. And the other thing, too, is that Colby Parkinson's going to play, and we're going to get Daryl Taylor hopefully back. And when that happens, all of the rookies will have contributed this year. That's pretty rare that you even keep all of your rookies, but just kind of a testament to the kind of draft that they had this year. When I didn't think any of these guys would have, I wouldn't think they would have been able to be ready to play, certainly, and contribute meaningfully. But then, you know, even like making the team was going to be tough for them, it seemed.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. You throw in Damian Lewis and in Dallas, and you're right, Dave. They've been a lot of contributors there. You know, for me, you know, Jordan Brooks, he's better than I thought he would be at this stage of his career. I didn't even know if he'd get on the field much. Yeah, and it had more to do with what they did at Texas Tech. I mean, it was the weird defense. I mean, he was a middle linebacker, you know, it was 5-6 yards back. He spied the quarterback, you know, 90% of the time. It was just a strange defense. You could see he could run sideline to sideline, and you thought he was going to be a good player, but I thought it would take him a couple of years just to learn the nuances of being an NFL linebacker. But, man, he is really good. He's very instinctive. And I think, you know, we just heard Pete talk about that. And it's in the zone game that you talk about, just picking up play action and looking up receivers. And I think he makes all the other linebackers better because of it. When you have a rookie come in and now you've been in this league a long time and you go, well, wait a minute, that guy's probably playing better than me. and he's picking up things better than me. I got to raise my game again. And when you're in the league a long time, it's hard to check yourself. You know, if you're the best player always on the field or best at your position, yeah, there's competition, but it's only competition within yourself, right? And as you get older, maybe you lose some of that. Now you got a guy that flat out doesn't take a playoff, runs sideline to sideline, thumps people. Dave, I know you saw this. I mean, the way he attacks guards, yep, particularly on zone or stretch plays outside, that's how you play linebacker. And the reason why it's so important is you want to attack the guard immediately so that the guys behind you can play off of that. If you come in too soft and you're too handsy and they're not really sure what you're doing, you need to define it quick. I've always said, just if you make a mistake, do it quick, do it fast, you know, and do it, you know, as strong as you can. And that's what he's doing. And so if he does make a mistake, you go, so what? I mean, it's 100 miles an hour. If you, Dave, it used to happen to you. If you had outside leverage, but you couldn't quite get there. You attacked a guard, and I saw that the guy got you. He hooked you. Well, I can play outside of that really quick. I see it. It's defined for me. You know, and I think that's what he's doing. And I think that he's a big reason why the last 2.5 games, our defense has started to play better.
That's good stuff there. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more. Maybe we can hear from, I know Ken Norton has a press conference coming up here, hear from Doug Peterson about Russell Wilson. We've talked mostly defense. Maybe we can talk some offense. I don't know, Paul. But
I like offense.
Yeah, we'll give that a shot. This hour of Wyman and Bob, still trying to get the new name down. Wyman and Bob. It's brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. All right, coming up next, we'll continue visiting with Paul Moyer. That's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. We got Dave Crosby and Paul Moyer on the line. And real quick, let's listen in to defensive coordinator Ken Norton holding a press conference right now.
Dealing what he's been dealing with. But at the same time, our guys got to show up. Our guys got to really put it together and make it our strength. We're really excited about this this challenge that we have.
Bob?
Yeah, Ken. Hey, we've heard from a few players and from Coach Carroll about this accountability meeting you held before the Arizona game. Just curious what the impetus for that was, and I guess how different was this from other meetings you usually hold during the week?
Well, we hold a lot of meetings, and I don't want to get into the specifics. I'm not quite sure what they revealed, but it's just a matter of we have a lot of different things going on in our Saturday night meetings, and this one was just another one that we found to be very important for us. But the way people reacted, the way we responded, obviously is something that we need to continue doing.
Maz Vita.
Yep. Hey, Coach. When a defense is able to set the edge, what does that do to the interior guys and then also the linebackers? How does that help in terms of the run game?
It'll sound like you're reading that there. the edges are very important because you have to put up a stop sign, put up an area where the offense can't get outside of. Most of the guys, we have a lot of guys inside playing. We have a tackle, nose tackle, linebackers. They're all on the interior. The edge setters are the outside defenders. So once you set the edge, you keep everybody inside of you. So it allows all the interior guys to make the tackle. But if you lose your edges, the ball goes all the way out to the sideline. There's not enough guys out there to help you tackle. So you turn the ball back in to all your defenders are and all your teammates are. It allows the entire team to be a part of the play.
How have you guys been so successful in accomplishing that this season?
Emphasis is certainly something that we came into the season. Guys that really understand what we're trying to do. Coaches and players being committed to setting the edges. And just continue to emphasize it each and every week.
All right. Hey, you know what? I wanted to talk. You guys there?
Paul? Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
I started the show one time that way. I couldn't hear anything.
Hello?
I was like, hello?
that's always a good start, isn't it?
Oh, it's a terrible start, Paul. Hey, what he was talking about there, it's funny. I just did a little thing on Football 101, Paul, a thing that we film here. I was talking to Graz about it. They talked about setting the edge and how important that is. And it's everything. And I used to always, you know, I told Dave Graz that I hated it when the corners or the safeties or whatever wouldn't turn things back. I'm like, all you have to do is turn it back inside. And, you know, that's something that they kind of got away from. And I think the two of the guys that I thought have done a really good job with that are KJ and Ugo Amadi. Those two guys both have been either attacking blockers on the edge or turning things back in. It's really been good to see. But that it's an incredibly important part of, you know, any running play, especially when you're playing the Rams, Paul, and they have those smoke screens where one receiver goes back, the other forward to block, or the fly sweep.
Yeah, and there's lots of ways to set the edge. You know, sometimes you want to set the edge quickly, and, you know, you're trying to restrict the lanes. There's other times you want to string it out. You don't want to get upfield. You can set an edge and actually create a lane that makes it hard for the linebackers to scrape and make the play. But it's critical. But I was always a believer, too. I kind of said it in the last segment. I'd just rather have you do something quickly. And the reason why is I can adjust from there. There's some times where I don't mind a ball bouncing outside as long as it bounces. You know, if he's running towards the line of scrimmage and gets outside, that makes it more difficult. But if he has to, you know, change his route and actually circle back and not, you know, go north and south, but more that east and west, I don't mind it. We can rally to that. But it is critical. And it's also one of those that people go, oh, that seems so simple. Well, it is, but you also need to trust each other. You know, when you play with somebody over and over, and I know exactly how you're going to set the edge for me and how much room I'm going to have to make that tackle, and if it does bounce outside, that, you know, I time that right where my momentum takes me not just to that hole that could have been there, but if it bounces, but my momentum takes me out there as well where I can still make the tackle. There's so many little things that take communication and trust and, you know, there's that communication where Dave, you and I, we just look at each other. We didn't have to say anything. And that's something that's really missing with this team. And it COVID has certainly been a big part of that. And again, I keep coming back to this. We're not a great defense yet, but we're getting there. I think last week we saw a glimpse of where we can go. I mean, we held the number one offense to 314 yards. We had the number one rushing offense. We held them to 57 yards. We had forced, I think, the least amount of punts all year. We forced four punts in the first half on Arizona. They only had one drive. They were successful. So those are all really positive things. And, you know, I think what was important about listening to Ken Norton, I think why people need to do it, as he's been getting crucified, obviously, in social media and in the media. These guys aren't dumb. These coaches know what they're doing. It's not like they've never seen a passing route before or pass protection. They know what they're doing. I think part of it maybe is they need to simplify it and let their playmakers just go out and play and not think too much.
Hey, this hour of the show is... Well, it's called Wyman and Bob, first of all.
Where is Bob?
They still have Bob Dave and Moore.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I apologize, Graz. I didn't say hi to you, who I've known you forever. I miss your voice. My wife is blowing kisses at you right now as she's watching me on this show. She gave you a double fist kiss, too. That's even better.
That's awesome.
Always popular with the ladies, Graz is.
Yes.
Ladies love the Graz.
Yeah.
Ladies do love the Graz. Where is Bob?
That's a great question.
Bob thing. Where?
That's
what's
a really, really good question. Yeah, we don't know where he is. So, but we got Graz here, so we're all good. And by the way, if Mara, you can just keep that clip that we just heard there. The ladies love the Graz. I thought he said it a little bit with kind of a little Barry White little accent.
He's been known to do that. Right. Hey, Graz, let me ask you. You've been around this team a long time.
Oh.
What, on paper, man, the players are there. I mean, I really do believe that. But what do you think is the difference? You know, give me a 13-14. Maybe it's just personality. Maybe it's attitude. Give me more perception of what you see the difference of.
Well, I'll tell you what. Graz is going to answer that question. What is the difference of this team that he's looking at? After the break here, we're going to go to break here, Paul. Is that all right?
Remember, Dave?
Are you okay?
Remember?
All right, I'm going to get even with you. I'm going to come back with all the things that you say that are screwed up. That's next right here on Wyman and Bob.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to the Paul Moyer Show. Paul, are you there?
You guys are funny.
It's the Wyman and Bob Show, actually.
Now listen to you guys. Listen to you guys trade back and forth is fantastic.
Well, here's what I say, Graz, about Paul Moyer is that I know everything about him and I like him anyway.
That's pretty good.
How about that?
That's real good.
That is. There's only about five people in the world like that, so that's you're in rare company.
This hour of the show brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. So, Paul, you had a question for Grosby.
It's just more because we're watching the film. We're breaking everything down. Sometimes just the perception is just, you know, that blink, you know, what is it that you see, Graz, that is missing?
It's been on defense for sure. I mean, and I don't know if it's pressure or what it is. It's consistency. I'm not really sure. You know, I think of the season. Did you guys see the movie Apollo 13?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember the scene where they're doing they got to do one last burn as they're heading to Earth, and they can't use the computer. Everything is shut down. And they go on this crazy wild ride. The whole point is to get things set by the end. Right. By the time they stop burning, by the time they turn the engine off, everything's got to be pointed in the right direction. And it seems like that's what this season is like a little bit. It's kind of figuring everything out to the point where when you get to the last two or three weeks of the season, which is probably how it always is, you've got everything going the right direction. I kind of look at the year as a year in progress. You know, you guys have talked about it a little bit, just in general, how difficult it is with the lack of practices that you would normally have. You know, this year times 10 because of COVID. And, you know, Dave talked about how you didn't think rookies would be able to contribute this year. And you've got rookies and free agents contributing. So to me, I just look at this as part of the ride to the end. You know, can they get to the point where they got everything pointed in the right direction at the end of the season? And the last element of it to me was defense. I mean, and the last 2 weeks were promising. I don't think they're going to be great, like you guys don't either, but they don't have to be great because they have a great offense this year. And if they get the running game back, you know, I think that they got a chance to accomplish everything they wanted to accomplish.
It is a remarkable. There's not a lot of teams that they didn't have their top two running backs, their top two cornerbacks, you know, just the rotation. You know, look, we didn't even have Maioa. You know, people forget he was our best pass rusher. He was out for a few weeks. You know, and to keep the train moving, you know, and to still win, yeah. You know, there's not a lot of teams out there, but I think you're right, Graz. I think, you know, you start putting, you're manually trying to fix things the whole way, you know, and it's a little chaotic. You hope you can eventually get to auto control, I guess, where you have a process or a system that you just get to call a few plays and they start reacting properly. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good analogy there.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, to think about how, you know, look at what the Rams are doing on defense. And I put it on the coach. I mean, you know, the Brandon Staley, the guy, obviously, Paul, is some kind of whiz kid. I mean, he's 37, but still, it's pretty young for a coach. He just got in the NFL in 2017. And, you know, he coached outside backers for Chicago. He was in Denver. And now he's their defensive coordinator. And they're top five in almost every category as far as defense goes. And they have two Pro Bowlers, by my count anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, I mean, to me it's Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. And obviously two really good players. But you look at the talent on this team. I'm sorry, it's not because of talent. It's other things. And Paul, you and I have traded videos and stuff about, you know, all the different what we think are assignment errors and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's surprising to me. It would be surprising to me if they went back to making those mistakes. After this happened, and I know Ken in the clip there, Ken Norton tried to kind of downplay that a little bit, and I think he doesn't want to, you know, give away too much of what they were doing in that meeting. But, you know, it would surprise me, Paul, if they went back to, you know, if 2 weeks from now you and I are trading plays that we film off of the television and sending it to it going, what's this guy doing? Well, why would this guy do that? I mean, I feel like it should be over.
Well, I think that the accountability part, it's always a fine line, you know, when you're coaching. And look, coaching is very important. Players are always more important. You know, my first couple years in the NFL as a coach, I was on a fast track, and people thought I was a really smart coach, and we had really good players, and we had a great defense. And by the time I was done, we had 12 defensive backs in my defensive back room. Not one of the eight guys I started with was playing. And I got really stupid very quickly. and that's what happens when you have great players. I would rather have, you know, 11 guys who have all played together who are good football players. I don't even need – it's nice. You only need one or two superstars, but you need really good fill-in players behind you. You know, rather than four or five, you know, Pro Bowlers, and then you're the drop and those other six guys are pretty relevant. You know, that becomes a problem. But the accountability one is when you have a guy like Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams is a flat-out playmaker. And there's times when you go, Jamal, go do your thing. I'm blitzing. Go do your thing. There's other times where I need you in this zone, and you cannot leave your zone. You can't come and try and get the quarterback if he's scrambling if you've got a flat or a hook zone. And I think at times Jamal, you know, he's so confident in his ability to make plays that, you know, he probably does that every once in a while. And yet, in a team defense, you go, now, Jamal, there's times when you can and there's times you can't. So everybody's accountable. And so not that I'm calling him out on that, but just an example. There's times where, you know, Jamal, he wants to go make a play. And you got to pull the reins back on him a little bit. And I think that happened a few times with throughout the game. And it's not like it happens every time. But if it happens once every three plays, offenses are pretty smart. They're going to go find that missing zone or missing void. And I think, again, that brings back that accountability. And if now you've got five or six Pro Bowlers, and they're all playing great team defense together, and now you got something special.
All right, Paul, before we let you go, and we really appreciate you hanging around for the entire hour, dropping some knowledge for people listening out there, good defensive knowledge especially. What's the favorite part of your Thanksgiving dinner, if you could pick one thing?
It's a little different this year because I don't have a couple of my kids. I've got my son, Nick, in town. We've kind of gotten away from turkey. We do more roast beef. My wife makes a Jell-O pretzel salad.
Away from turkey?
Yeah, it makes us sleepy. And we've learned that and now that you have night games, football, which we don't this week because it got postponed to Sunday. Right. But none of us love turkey. So we said, why don't we go buy some great steak, some great roast beef, and let's have a feast that way. So that's it. My wife makes a Jell-O pretzel salad that's unbelievable and a Swedish apple pie that her mother passed down to her. So those are my three things, roast beef, Jell-O pretzel salad and some Swedish apple pie, and life is good.
That is fantastic. All right, just text me your weigh-in numbers next week, and we'll compare.
I'm about 3 pounds up, Dave. So, but I'm still okay right now.
Attaboy. Okay. I'll keep fighting. Yeah. Well, we're gonna go from one professor to the next, Professor Moyer. Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Thanks
for coming on. Happy Thanksgiving. Say hi to the family.
Thank you, buddy. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Appreciate it.
Best to you, Brad.
There he goes.
Hey, by the way, Dave, I got a big announcement on the John Clayton Show.
What do you got?
Well,
you're going to make it. Oh, that's a tease.
Yeah.
He's teasing,
that's
Paul.
A tease.
That's known as a tease in the business. I wouldn't know that.
Dave.
All right.
Difference.
The difference between a pro like Groz and me. Exactly. All right. Thanks, Paul. And coming up next, you heard it. It's the Professor John Clayton. We tune in to hear Groz's big, what is it, a big reveal? What are you doing? Groz is gone. All right. Let's just go to the professor. We'll talk to the professor next on Wyman and Bob.